The truth.
Is that how you say comrade in Chinese, 同志?
同志们。同志们。同志们。同志们。同志们.
My comrades, that's the plural, 同志们. And how about lady comrade?
女同志们。女同志。女同志,
I remember.
女同志们。Yeah.
So 同志们 for 女同志们. I don't know, I know it sounds horrible. At any rate, welcome to National Bugle Radio, all you comrades out there. National Bugle Radio on the People's Republic Broadcasting Network. I do it on, it's for fun. It's for fun. On the Republic Broadcasting Network. It's our republic, and we are people, so I guess technically it's a People's Republic. But, yes, welcome, and go to republicbroadcasting.org. It is your home, not just for free speech, but for fun speech. We can have fun, can't we? Can't we? I'm going to have fun. And also go to nationalbugle.com, where you can download the kosher-certified app and see if your sweet and sour pork is kosher-certified or not. Pro tip, probably not. Okay. This is our China Day. I don't know if it is. Let's see. What do you say, Xingqi Si or Qingxi Wu? I don't know what day it is, but
yes, it's either Thursday or Friday, Xingqi Si or Xingqi Wu.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those, probably, or not. I don't know, but it's actually Xingqi Yi. As we record, right?
Right, Xingqi Yi, Monday.
Monday, yeah, yeah. Which is Moon Day. You say Moon Day in Japanese or Korean, but that's okay. So anyway, we have Kato here, who is our resident Chinese expert.
Yes, good to be back. And this is National People's Radio. National People's Radio.
That's right. And if this was Jon Stewart's daily, The Daily Show, you would be our senior China correspondent. That's what he always did. He had Larry Gilmore. He always had the senior something correspondent. And then he once introduced Larry Wilmore as the black correspondent. And Larry Wilmore glared at him. Okay, senior black correspondent. Okay, that's better. So, good. I mean, Jon Stewart has some good gags, whatever. I always thought the guy before him was better, whatever his name was. I can't remember anymore. Anyway.
Jon Stewart is in my opinion, he is a perverted Jewish warmonger.
I think he was more responsible for gay marriage in the United States than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
That's
no surprise, considering he's Jewish.
Yeah.
John
Leibowitz. He really normalized it with that show. He normalized gayness and gay marriage and everything else. And it was very influential back in the aughts and the early teens, whatever you want to call it. But we're not here to talk, at least we're not here to talk about Jon Stewart. There's a couple of things, and I'm going to start first with Mark Collett. This morning on our show, towards the end of the show, he brought up something about the social credit system in China. And, of course, everybody hears about the social credit system and is alarmed at it because of the privacy intrusion, right, which you know, it is contrary to American tradition. Fair enough. That's very fair. Of course, we've got Facebook and Google and AT&T and all these other, you know, tech companies that are spying on us and often using Israeli companies in the process. So it's happening here. But he said something about the social credit system, though, that was very interesting. He wasn't talking about the privacy aspect of it. He was saying he was talking about it as a means of encouraging people in China to lead what we would have called, you know, moral or ethical or that, you know, that type of life. He said that in China, you get social credit points for like taking your grandmother to the park or doing things like that. And you get negative social credit points for staying out late at a disco. He said those were real examples. I don't know the system. Do you know much about the social credit system?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was just like one of your other guests, Paul Edward Stevenson, said a few months ago. He said that in China, it's all about social cohesion and, you know, social harmony, what's good for society. Whereas in the West, basically, if you're not a COVID vaccine-loving Bolshevik degenerate, you'll be persecuted for it. So the Chinese social credit system and the American or the Western one are the complete opposites. China's encourages really good, but you know, it's designed to encourage good behavior and being a good citizen of the nation. Whereas in the United States, in the West, in the occupied West, it's encouraging you to be, you know, a bad degenerate, an evil person who, you know, spies on their neighbors for I don't know, breaking COVID protocols and going against the global homo degeneracy.
Right. So it's as a traditional American who cares about freedom and privacy and that type of thing, I don't like being monitored by the powers that be. But the fact of the matter is, we are being monitored by the powers that shouldn't be. We are. And would you rather be monitored by people who are going to make your life a living hell because you say that men can't get pregnant or that, you know, whatever? Or would you rather be monitored, Given you had to choose, and we don't get to choose because we're monitored by people who will punish us for saying men can't get pregnant. But if you could choose, wouldn't you rather choose someone who would prefer you to take grandma to the park, not stay out late at discos, and you know, get married and have kids, get married to somebody of the opposite gender and have kids?
Well, that's the thing. It's in China, it's positive social credit system, whereas in the U.S. it's negative social credit system. Of course, China and the United States and the West are two totally completely different societies with completely different peoples and different mindsets. In China, it's always been about, you know, cohesion, about collective cohesion and social cohesion, whereas in the United States, it's always been about individual, you know, the individual freedoms and individual liberties. And that's just, you know, the two people are, they're wired differently that way. And that's just a fact that, you know, both sides should accept. I found this article here. This is on American Renaissance on November 13, 2020, that says, basically the headline of this article is America's social credit system is worse than China's. And this is by Gregory Hood, who I would not say that he is pro-Chinese like we are or like some people in our movement are, but he's definitely
neutral and objective. I'm not particularly pro-Chinese, but I'm neutral and objective. But relatively, like not on absolute, but relatively, I mean, relative to our American system, heck yeah, I'm very pro-Chinese relative to what we have.
Well, I know you do want a job with them if they ever do take over.
Yeah, give me if you have any connections. Yeah, I'll study. I'll learn how to speak better. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, basically this article, it's a really long article, but essentially Gregory Hood, he points out that essentially that you know, the Chinese social credit system, that's just based on, you know, national unity, based on, you know, doing what's it's based on patriotism, whereas here in the degenerate Weimar USA empire, it's based on, you know, the complete opposite. It's based on how much of a degenerate you can, you're rewarded based on how much of a degenerate you can be, and you're punished based on how righteous or virtuous you can be, especially if you're a truth teller like us.
Mm. So, yeah, China has a very different system. And Confucius, that's Kongxi? How do you say Confucius in Chinese?
Kongzi.
Of course, Kongzi, because Zi is a little child at the end. Kongzi. Okay. Kongzi, Confucius, he wasn't about like atomized individuals. He was about hierarchy, right, and relationships, and the relationships not being equal. But so you have the relationship between the emperor and the subject, between the father and the son, between the husband and the wife, between the older brother and the younger brother. Did I got that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct. It's based on hierarchy from the emperor all the way down to the child.
And they have it's not what's the word when it's the exact same on both sides? It's my brain's shot. But at any rate, they have different sets of responsibilities to each other. So it's not just that the king can order the subject around. Well, maybe he can order the subject around, but in return, he's got to deliver. There's a lot he has to deliver on. The same with the son and the father. You know, the son owes the father obedience, but the father owes the son, you know, benevolent upbringing and provision and things like that. Do I have it right?
Yes. Yeah, pretty much. Basically, yeah, the son has to respect the father, but the father is responsible for providing for the son, providing, you know, the basic needs for the family. But yes, the son and, you know, the mother, they both need to honor the father as the head of household. Very, very traditional, you know, family-oriented philosophy.
So it's different. And in the China, okay, so the United States is always trying to get, I guess the United States sees its own values. And maybe even before, I don't know how much this was before Jewish domination of the United States, but we're always trying to export our values. I suppose, you know, Europeans were trying to export Christianity, and maybe Europeans have a tendency to universalize their own values. Maybe. And now the United States is trying to push its new values of homosexuality and trannyism and multiculturalism and all this stuff. It's trying to push it everywhere. I have a question. Do you think China cares if the United States, if people in the United States are part of a social credit system of any kind?
If China cares?
Yeah.
Well, as long as it doesn't affect China or you know, threatens China's sovereignty, then China's not, they're not interested in intervening in other people's affairs. They're just interested in protecting their own, which, you know, I guess for people like us would be unfortunate, since there's really not a whole lot we can do to change the course that that the West is going.
So throughout China's got a very, very long history, obviously, and countries around China, some of them have histories that are pretty old too. So you've got Korea, you've got Vietnam, you have Tibet, you have you know, other countries, Thailand, I guess, was in the sphere. And you had the Ryukyu Islands with Okinawa, for instance. And there was almost a kind of Confucian relationship there too. So China, in some cases, had a relationship that would be known as suzerainty. It had suzerainty over Tibet, for instance. So Tibet, you know, it had it did its own affairs, but there was an acknowledgement that that Tibet had to pay tribute to China, and so it's Tibet or some of the other neighboring countries would pay tribute. They would come, they'd pay respects, and give a gift. And China, as in my understanding, the Chinese emperor, being, you know, having that Confucian relationship, would accept it, would accept the respect, but then give a gift much larger back, because of course, you know, China's a big, great country. It has largesse, and that was kind of China's relationship with the countries that you could say were in its orbit. How accurate is that?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. All these smaller Asian countries, they did pay tribute to China because China was the dominant sphere of influence in Asia, in the Far East. Asia Pacific, so yeah, all these tiny little countries like Vietnam and, you know, even Korea would, yeah, they would pay tribute to the Chinese emperor, and then the Chinese emperor would give them, like, you know, some gold and you know, precious metals, while they would, you know, basically in return they would give them something, I don't know, something really cheap from their own land.
So, and you know, we say tiny little countries like Vietnam and Korea, which are as big as, you know, England or Germany, big countries.
But well, tiny for Asia. Tiny for Asia.
China, yeah, compared to, or even compared to India, I suppose. But yeah, they're big countries. Okay, so there was that one last thing before I set you loose. Sometimes you hear, and you hear it from RBN callers or whatnot, this worry about the UN is going to invade the United States using Chinese troops. How likely do you think something like that is? Is that even plausible?
Well, people, they have a misconception about the UN, and you know, a lot of them are well-intended people, but they think the UN is this monolithic, you know, gigantic, you know, institution that just has, you know, has a mind of its own. It's the be all end all of the one world government.
It has a mind of its own.
New world order. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has a mind of its own. Yeah, but it's not. It's really got a bunch of holes in it. It's really a paper tiger. Because the UN, what is the UN comprised of? It's all these, you know, all the different countries of the world, and they all pay, you know, a certain amount to the UN. Of course, the biggest funder of the UN is the United States. Follow the money. So who's really the one that's in charge of the UN, so to speak? Well, it's the U.S. empire. So, yeah, there's really nothing to fear from the UN. You know, all these different countries, they have, you know, their different beliefs. Of course, you know, you got the, you know, I guess for the people who get more esoteric, you do have the really, you know, the liberal, you know, globalist, very, very, you know, kind of satanic elites that are pushing the one world religion stuff and interfaith through the UN, but that's not really the main part of it. Really, just all these different countries that get together and they talk about, okay, how can we tackle, you know, certain global issues, but they all don't have the same interests. So, yeah, really the UN it's not to fear. It's, you know, our very own U.S. government that's more to be concerned about, you know, never fear anything, but to be more concerned about than the UN.
Yeah. So the UN,
like for example, mm-hmm. Well, for example, was it the UN who violently crushed the January 6th protesters? Was it the UN that violently crushed them? No, it was our own U.S. government that violently crushed them with you know, U.S. police and troop with and military soldiers.
Yeah, yeah. With police, yeah, and you did have National Guard come in. So, okay, we are coming up on the break. I'm trying to see exactly where we are break-wise. So we'll be right back.
Come on, Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast 2-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
Okay, so we are back, and just briefly about the UN, its structure. You've got the General Assembly, which has 200 or so members. And, you know, they go and they get to say what they want. They can pass resolutions against Israel, which they do all the time. But the UN General Assembly resolutions are not binding. Then there's a Security Council, which has 15 members. Five are permanent, which is the United States, France, Great Britain, Russia, originally the Soviet Union, and the People's Republic of China, originally the Republic of China, and Taiwan held that seat until, 1973 or something. And those five permanent members have a veto power, and then there's 10 other members that are elected for two-year terms by region. So there's always going to be a couple from Africa, always extras from Europe, from South America, or from, you know, here and there. But those five, it's really those five countries, they have the veto power. And out of those five countries, the one that throws its weight around the most and has used the veto the most often is the United States. If its interests are against Russia's interests, sometimes Russia or the Soviet Union would use the veto. China is the least likely to use the veto. And so really, the United States has been running the UN. And so the idea that the United States, that does the most funding, that has the UN building in New York City, surrounded, by American police and whatnot, And where the United States has a not just its own veto power, but it's got these two close satellites, France and Britain, that also have veto power. The idea that the UN is somehow going to authorize troops, let alone Chinese troops, to somehow invade the United States, which is protected by these two oceans, really, anybody who believes that just needs to wake up, because that's it's so unrealistic. Any comments on that before we move on?
Yeah, I just want to say this too. You know, the John Birch Society, which, you know, they're well-intended people, but they're, you know, misguided on this views. They used to have a saying, you know, get the U.S. out of the U.N. But in reality, it's really the other way around. Get the U.N. out of the U.S. because the U.S. is the one that's controlling the U.N., not the other way around.
Yeah. You know what I'd say? I would say the simplest thing to do with the U.N., the best thing to do perhaps would just be to abolish the Security Council and abolish the function of the Security Council. Having the General Assembly in its current form, where people, where they can come, they can pass non-binding resolutions, which have, you know, some sort of moral authority, but they have no, you know, no military backing. And you get a place where, you know, it's expensive to maintain for a country like Ecuador to maintain an embassy in Sweden or in every other country, 200 other countries. That's a big expense. They can't do it. But to have one place where they can, you know, everybody can maintain a diplomatic mission. And so when Ecuador needs to talk to Finland or Estonia, they can. And, you know, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. All right. You were talking about another article, the same article, but you wanted to read a section from it.
Yeah, real quick. I wanted to read a section from Gregory Hood's article on the American Renaissance about America's social credit system being worse than China's. And it's this paragraph down here. It says, he says, quote, their system, their meaning China, their system is authoritarian, but it has this crucial difference from ours. It pushes people to behave correctly. In our Anglo-American tradition, personal virtue is the guarantor of our liberties, so we don't need overarching government. However, we are no longer virtuous, at least not in the way the founders understood virtue. Instead, anti-racism has become America's moral code, and blacks are semi-sacred. Any social interaction with a non-white can be life-changing disaster if it is caught on camera. The rules for what is politically correct change so quickly that no one can be sure what to say to avoid trouble. We're in an absurd system in which groups that enjoy government mandate did affirmative action lecture us about our privilege. Although racism is the main sin of our social credit system, our social criticism punishes, there are others. Homophobia, Islamophobia, misogyny, xenophobia, with more new ones invented all the time. While the Chinese social credit system builds a better, if regimented, society, ours makes it worse. The media feed non-whites moral arguments to use against whites, whether they are about racist police, systematic racism, or far-right extremists. Anyone non-white, from educated elites to illiterate thugs, can feel justified in attacking middle-class whites because the only explanation for inequality is white racism. And that right there sums it up perfectly.
So I haven't done a big study of the social credit system. The assumption by so many seems to be that it is primarily aimed at squashing political dissent. But of course, I mean, maybe there's that aspect of it, but what I'm hearing from Mark Collett this morning and from this article that you're writing, or that you're reading from, that you're referencing, that it's about a lot more than squashing political dissent, but of encouraging a healthy society. Do we want a social credit system? Probably most people don't. Do we have one? Yeah. And is it way worse than the Chinese one? It would seem that
Gregory Hood.
Gregory Hood at the American Renaissance would say absolutely. Okay, we're at the break. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Amazon customer: it's amazing. I just ordered my second bottle. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after I exercise. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off of BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. Amazon customer: Extendivite works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. Amazon customer: excellent herbal formula. I've been using it to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store, or call us
800-724-2719 extension 3. 800-724-2719 extension 3.
We are back. So the Olympics are on, and of course, I guess it was 12 years ago that Beijing had the Olympics. Was it 12 years?
Yeah, 2008.
And I know, like, David Duke still talks about the, and contrasts the Beijing opening ceremony with the British opening ceremony, which was the Beijing one celebrated Chinese history, and the British one, the London Olympics 4 years later, seemed to be ashamed of British history and was celebrating multiculturalism. What's going on in Tokyo?
Well, Tokyo's opening ceremony, I would say, was right in between the two, with Beijing being very nationalistic, very proud of their history, and London being, you know, completely degenerate and trashing their own, you know, Anglo-Saxon heritage. Unfortunately for you know, Tokyo, Japan, I was kind of disappointed. I was expecting them to be a lot more, shall we say, more ethnocentric, more proud of their own history, as, you know, the one in Beijing was, as the one in China was. But unfortunately, that was not the case. They were pushing this multiculturalism, this multiracialism upon Japan now. Now, it's nowhere near as bad as the one in London in 2012, but that's not saying much at all. The majority of the cast for the performances were still Japanese, but the problem is the lead roles were given to, shall we say, half Japanese and half blacks. Basically, they had a, you know, unfortunately, it was the, both of them had a black father and a Japanese mother. The first one was the flag bearer for the Japanese Olympic team. He was a basketball player,
NBA player, Hachimoto, and he's got a good reputation in Japan, I guess, because he speaks Japanese fluently.
Yeah, I'm sure he's a nice guy in real life, but it's just making him as the official symbol for the Japanese team. I mean, that's, you know, very shameful in my opinion. It's very insulting to the Japanese people. Any self-respecting Japanese person would look at that and say, you know, no, that's really insulting. But even worse than him though was the torch bearer, the torch lighter for the Olympic flame, and that was of course the Blackanese, as I call him, Blackanese tennis player Osaka.
Doesn't speak any Japanese.
Apparently
she understands Japanese because her mother would talk to her in Japanese, but she's not comfortable speaking Japanese herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And you know, she was there just totally out of place. I mean, she had, you know, she had these red dreadlocks, she was really proud of her black half. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to even call them, I mean, my opinion, they're both black. I mean, once, you know, a black with anything is black. So, but yeah, I mean, that's what happened was they got these two, you know, black Japanese players and made them the official symbol. I mean, that was just so insulting. And it was, you know, I mean, it was insulting to the emperor. The emperor was there too. I mean, he was the one opening the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And you know, to have to see this, and then the way they did it too was during the torch lighting ceremony they would pass on the torch from person to person.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the way they did it was the old Japanese athletes, you know, really old. There's this one guy who was really old. He had to be carried by somebody to go light the torch or to pass on the torch. And in a way, I mean, I don't know if they did this intentionally, but it kind of symbolizes like the old Japanese, you know, the pure Japanese Yamato peoples, like, they're going away. And this is the new Japanese, this mixed, you know, mongrel, whatever. I mean,
one of the old athletes that you would have seen, and you might not have noticed this, was Chinese, actually. At least he's half Chinese. He's at least half Chinese. He might be all the way Chinese. And that's Sadaharu Oh, the home run king. And he was elderly. He was one of the last five, I think, to pass on the torch. You might not have been familiar with him. I've actually met him in real life.
Was he the one that was carried, had to be carried by the by someone else, or?
I don't think so. I just saw a little bit of it. The other famous baseball player, both of them used to be manager of the Tokyo Giants. The other one is Nagashima, and he had a stroke some years ago. I don't know, but I don't know. I would hate to think that Sadaharu Oh would have to be carried. He didn't look that decrepit but he did look a lot older than I remember him.
Yeah. But yeah, and then of course, because of the whole COVID restrictions, there was no one in the stadium, and it was actually really sad. I mean, just, you know, the Japanese, they prepare so much for this, and then it just results in this. And then, of course, there was one weird part, too, where they said, let us take a moment of silence for all the victims of COVID-19 and for those Israeli athletes that were killed in Munich Olympics of, was it, 1978?
1972, so that's 49 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Since then that the Israelis have killed. Why weren't they mourning the kids in Gaza who were killed
exactly
a month ago or whatever it was?
Why weren't they mourning all the Palestinians that were being murdered by Israelis, you know, these Israeli thugs, these Israeli terrorists, you know, a couple months ago? Or what about all the victims of the U.S. Empire? But of course, you know, that's we know they can't do that. That brings to this other point too, which is, you look at all the different teams there. Guess which team was the most diverse of all the teams, most racially diverse?
What does that even mean? United States?
Yep. Team USA, or as I call it, Team Globo Homo. Team Globo Homo was the most diverse, and guess which team was the most homogenous?
The Chinese.
The People's Republic of China, and of course, you know, Chinese Taipei and Hong Kong included. And South Korea, too, but the People's Republic of China was the big one. And this transitions into the Olympic medal count. So China is owning the United States right now in terms of number of gold medals, mm-hmm. with China at 29 gold medals and the United States, or Team Globo Homo, at 22.
Uh-huh.
So China, very ethnically homogenous, proud China, is owning this team of clowns, these disgusting degenerate clowns who quit because they have mental issues. And the only reason why the United States is even up there, and I looked at this the other day too, it's not because the United States is that good at sport. It's just that they have more athletes. The United States is by far the largest team in the Olympics. Do you know how many athletes the United States has?
I'd say somewhere between... It's in four figures. Is it between 1 and 2,000? How many is it?
Over 1,000.
Yeah.
1,033, to be exact. And China only has 451.
Uh-huh.
So a team with only 451 is already beating a team with over 1,000 in the number of gold medal counts. I mean, that's just... Yeah, and the United States is almost twice the size of the next largest team in this Olympics, which would be Japan. The host country,
it gets to enter athletes in every event. Typically, you have to qualify for events, but if you're the host country, you get to enter athletes in every event.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. But yeah, the only reason why the United States is even up there is because of the numbers, and because China only has 450, the United States is over 1,000, and yet China is still beating Team Globo Homo, which is. That's good, because it really shows you that, a nation that respects itself must always come ahead, one that doesn't, and not only one that doesn't, but one that seeks to impose its degeneracy upon others. So, but then of course, the mainstream media, the Jewish-dominated Western media, the New York Times, CNN, even something as benign as sports... Mm-hmm. Something as as apolitical as sports, they have to somehow politicize this and make this all about, oh, China, bad. I mean, there's this one headline from CNN the other day. This was near the beginning when China won the first gold in the entire Olympics. It was gold for China and more COVID-19 cases. And then in the subtitles, it says a Chinese shooter, the air rifle shooting, Yang Qian has won the first gold medal of the Tokyo Olympics with more coronavirus cases announced. I mean, just they can't even let China enjoy their victory, celebrate their glory for working hard and achieving this. They have to. It's so infuriating. I mean, this American empire, Western media, this Jewish dominated Western media is just so infuriating. Even on the little stuff, they have to pick like this. And then, of course, we see, the New York Times, also had another hit piece, too, on China. This is from the Stormer, the Daily Stormer, with Anglin commenting. He said, New York Times attacks China for winning too many Olympic medals. And then, of course, the headline of the New York Times was, the Chinese sports machine's single goal, the most gold at any cost. It's like, and then Anglin says, he's like, yeah, how dare the Chinese win sports? They should be hiring black people to quit and say they're having a breakdown due to racism and lose everything. Real nations, true democracies, lose everything in order to help black people with their anxiety issues. And then he links this RT article, by Tom Foudy on RT. He says, the gold medal for anti-Beijing hysteria goes to the New York Times for its unhinged attack on China's Olympic success. So it's like, China, the Chinese obviously take, athletics, they take everything seriously. They take athletics seriously. And of course they want to do what's best. Isn't that what every country does? Every self-respecting nation does? They want to do what's best? And somehow they're saying like, oh, this is oppressive and this is a machine. This is them, oppressing them to train them to do their best. It's just so pathetic. I mean, this Western media, this Jewish-dominated Western media, has sunk to new lows.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Well, I was just going to say, the United States, you know, we've had the National League in baseball has been around since 1876. The Cincinnati Reds, in some form or another, have been around since 1869. The modern Olympic movement started in 1896. You know, if you go back 100, 125 years, the United States was always among the most affluent countries. It's affluent. It's always had, you know, one of the largest populations on Earth during that period. You know, never number one, but it's always been in the top four. And it's had the luxury of doing a lot of sports, and maybe it took a lot of the Olympics for granted, and also a lot of the Olympic sports aren't really the sports that Americans like the most, because Americans like baseball, which this year is in the Olympics, but usually it's not. American football isn't, you know, nobody else plays it except for Canada, and you know, basketball's become international, but you know, That's really what the Americans like. And so the success of the Olympics, A, it was taken for granted, and B, it really wasn't even that big of a deal. But for a lot of other countries, the success at the Olympics has always been a big deal of national pride. It was for the Soviet Union. It was for the Eastern Bloc countries, East Germany in particular, and they'd just drug up their players like crazy. But I remember in, what was it, 1976 or 1980, looking at the medal count, and East Germany would be neck and neck with the United States, and both countries way behind. And that's East Germany. That's only like one-third of Germany. And the Soviet Union would be way ahead. And then when South Korea was hosting the Olympics in 1988, it was just such a big deal. And so a lot of countries, especially up-and-coming countries, countries that were having hard times, countries that were poor a few decades ago, it takes on a very different aspect. I mean, it's the national pride aspect of it is a lot greater in countries that have been through hard times and maybe feel like they have to instill some pride in their people. Whereas in the United States, not nearly so much.
Yeah, and also, you know, for global status, because a lot of it, too, is, you know, measured through sports and how, you know, how well the athletes do. Of course, the thing is, the United States is not a nation. It's hasn't been one in a long time. I mean, you know, case in point reflected as in the Team Globo Homo with all the... you know, very diverse group of degenerates comprising of Team USA.
Yeah.
And,
I'd say there is an American nation, but it is the nation that created the United States, but it's under attack from the American government.
Yeah, exactly. It's under occupation.
When did China come back to the Olympics? Because China was absent from the Olympics throughout much of the... you know, throughout the Mao years and maybe a little bit after that. When did China come back? Was it in the 1980s, 1990s? When was it?
I think... I'm not sure. I'll have to look that one up. I think it was either in the 80s or 90s. It was during Deng Xiaoping is when they came back to the Olympics.
And the first year they came back, they really didn't do very well. And if you've got the world's largest population... you know, you don't want to go to the Olympics and not do well. It doesn't look mm-hmm. good. I mean, the Indians go and they don't do well, but I guess they've got bigger fish to fry. And Philippines apparently won their first gold medal in their history just last week. I guess they've got other fish to fry.
Well, that's definitely something for them to be proud of. I mean, that's definitely a big deal for them. But yeah, and then speaking of which too, of course Russia has also banned Russia, the nation, is also banned from the Olympics because of some. They say, oh, it's because of a doping scandal, but no, it's purely political reasons because they don't like Russia. But they came back as the ROC, the Russian Olympic Committee, and they're actually doing pretty good too. They're number three in total medal counts, and I think they're number five in total gold counts. So they're doing pretty good too.
And the Japanese are doing well. So bonsai.
Yeah, the Japanese are number three. In bonsai.
Okay.
And 中国加油.
Okay. Well, we're at the break. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, KosherTified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher-certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out the kosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the KosherTified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Okay, we are back, and you've got another interesting article on the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is from Wayne Dupree on RT. Wayne Dupree, he's a black American. He's a black he's really a normie con, but he has commentary on RT, and he's basically talking about all the dysfunctions with the American system and the American government. But he had a really interesting article, an op-ed on RT. He says, I used to patriotically support every American athlete at the Olympics. Now I actively hope they lose. And then he starts and he says, the smug self-entitlement, the woke anti-American activism, and the hypocrisy of today's millionaire sportsmen and women makes me ashamed. It's time to dump those who disrespect our flag and are unrepresentative of our country. And then he talks about when he was a child in the 70s, he used to watch the Americans and the Soviet Union, and he used to really cheer, be real patriotic, for America against the Soviet, and, he would say that he would get down when the Americans would lose to the Soviet Union. But then he comes down and he says, basically, let's see here. He comes down and he says, the pro leagues and athletes have achieved the impossible. They managed to turn fans who would watch in big numbers for the USA in a tiddlywinks match to have them root against their own country. This is just one consequence of the radical left's imprint on our society. Here's something to ponder. Don't you find it shameful that your favorite athletes protest at their games for human rights or for Black Lives Matter, but still they completely ignore, he gets into them, says something really stupid here, so I won't read that, but, let's see here. Let's go down to, he says, in the real world, if you are a representative for a company, business, or corporation, your actions are a direct reflection on those who put you in that position. Let's start holding our sporting representatives responsible for their actions. Find suitable replacements and fire those that, well, again, he's, getting all patriotic and very, normie-conish. He's saying that disrespect the flag and the country. And then he says, down here, he says, it pains me to say this, but I am not the only one that feels this way. Millions would agree that it would be good for Team USA men's and women's basketball not to make the podium. Throw in the women's soccer team as well. We're tired of their whining. They've achieved more life in the USA than they would have anywhere else on the planet, yet they are still apparently oppressed. I am an American and I love my country, but this has been the first time that I've rooted against an American team. Take politics out of sports, and I can return to being a fan. Until then, I hope they lose. And yeah, this is a black American normie con who, obviously, America, USA, just that very, very foolish mentality, in my opinion, because of not understanding the whole picture. But here he is. Even he says, even this normie con who would otherwise, be all about, yeah, America, yeah, USA. Even he can see it, that just how bad, degenerate the team, Team USA. It's Team Global Homo. It's not Team USA. It's Team Global Homo. Yeah. It's a diverse group of degenerates.
And there is a particular incentive for blacks, and he's black, to support the Black Lives Matter and complain about everything. So I'll give a black person more credit than I would a white normie con for those takes. But at any rate, we're out of time. So I want to thank you, Chi-Shin-Yi, for being on the show with me.
Bu-ka-chi. 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 Flattery, Stinson.
Okay, good. And we're looking forward to your next visit here, whenever that will be. And I'll be back again next time with another exciting episode of National Beagle Radio.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.